said, hold your head, son, it only take a second.
Check it out now.
Come on, while I wreck it, like I said, hold your head, son, it only take a second.
Check it out now.
People, come on, while I wreck it, like
I thank you for listening to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with Liberty Ballers' own Mike Levin. Mike.
Spike.
Are you all hungover from college basketball watching on Tuesday night? Do you watch much of that? I figured we should start the podcast off talking about who the Sixers should select with their whatever their draft pick is, as the draft is tomorrow, and the only basketball we're going to get to see of the top picks was last night. So we might as well.
Well, I don't disagree with any of that.
Right.
Yeah, I watched most of both games. I was at work for some of it. But yeah, I watched most of the Kentucky-Michigan State and Duke-Kansas games.
Both fantastic games, as I'm sure I've mentioned to you, and I know I've mentioned publicly several times. I don't watch a lot of college basketball just because, I don't know, I only have so much time to watch basketball, and I like pro basketball better. But both games were fantastic. They were awesome.
Yeah, and just for a second, I watched it with a couple friends who are Kansas fans. I read a tweet out that was sort of making fun of people who like college basketball more than the NBA.
Right.
And they were just not pleased. The college basketball versus NBA debate is the worst.
It is.
Debate anyone could ever have.
Well,
like, I'd rather talk about racist abortions in politics.
Well, because they're both filled with the worst, and maybe it's because of the side that I'm on, and, you know, enjoy what you enjoy. But to me, the worst part of it is that the college basketball people paint both the NBA and college basketball with brushes that are, you know, 30 years old. Like, to me, it's most people are saying, you know, college basketball is all team and blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. And all the NBA is cornrows and rap music. That's, you know what I mean? And selfish play. And, like, that's all I ever hear. It's all just, you know, those nonsense, I guess, false narratives from years ago. I don't even know why people get angry at me when I say that I like the NBA better. So I don't even know what to say. I don't even know how to combat that. You know,
yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
Ethan Rothstein, who writes Destination, I think had a tweet that said, if you like college basketball more than the NBA, you don't like basketball, you like crowds.
That's a nice point, actually. It is. I do agree that the atmosphere for college basketball is better.
Yeah,
but
it's fun.
Yeah, but college football atmosphere is better. I mean, you know, college, you have this built-in fan base that hasn't paid for their tickets and don't give a shit. Like, you know what I mean? Or just they their whole goal is to go there and be rowdy. And
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's part of the culture. I think it's the one thing that I really enjoyed when I went to the few Union matches I went to. I sat in the Sons of Ben section. It's fun because they stand up the whole time and they cheer the whole time. It's like college sports, but to me, it has very little effect of what I'm seeing on the court. It doesn't make any of them. It just means I like one over the other. But,
yeah.
You know, the whole NBA players play more selfishly is nonsense. You know, you see as much one-on-the-team stuff in college basketball, probably even more than you see in NBA basketball.
Yeah, and just the issue for me is, like, why do you have to pick? Like, what is the point of the question? I love basketball. I like watching basketball. I like playing basketball. I broke my finger, and I'm still going to be playing basketball because I'm an idiot. Why do I have to choose between, like, college and NBA? It's one of those, like, I feel like Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless-driven
yes.
questions where, like, you have to take a stance, and that stance is the most important thing you've ever decided in your life.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like the, you know, just to take it to quarterbacks for a second, like, Michael Vick isn't even healthy now, but for some reason people insist on making me choose Nick Foles or Michael Vick. And I just like can we, the choice is made. Can we move on? Like, there's no choice. There's no choice to make, you know.
Yeah, obvious choice is Matt Barkley.
Yes, obviously. When you can pick a quarterback with a weak arm and a fat face, you pick that guy. So to the games last night, just keeping them in perspective, and I did joke on Twitter that after these games, I would be flooded with tweets as to who the Sixers should take with their pick, even though we don't know. We've seen essentially one game and don't know what pick they have.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, everybody's an expert as to which guy they should choose. So I will certainly, given that I don't watch very much college basketball at all, the only thing I'll say about watching those, well, not only thing, but the base thing I will say after watching all three of those guys is that all three of them look, just Randall, Parker, Wiggins, they all look like players to me. That's all I took from last night.
I mean, they're very good, very young basketball players with varying amounts of upside. And it's going to be so much fun this season watching them, you know, succeed and get better.
Yeah.
The biggest issue I have is that people sort of get behind a name, like they hear Andrew Wiggins, and people started probably hearing about him, you know, within the last, I'd say, 12 months. People started really hearing about Andrew Wiggins. And then that's the name they know, and then that's who they want. Like, if the Sixers don't get Wiggins, they're tanking for Wiggins. If they don't get him, then, you know, oh, of course the Sixers don't. Like, it always happens to us, that kind of stuff. And it's like, this is not a one-player draft. It's not even a three-player draft.
Yeah.
It is a loaded draft, from honestly, from top to bottom at this point. You know, people will drop out. People will come in that you don't expect. There's foreign guys that you don't really know about yet. Last night was a great example of how many good players are going to be in the draft this year. And then you add other guys like, you know, Marcus Smart at Oklahoma State, Aaron Gordon at Arizona, other Kansas guys like Joel Embiid he's developing as a player.
Yeah, it might be a spot where if they, you know, having 4 and 6 might be better than having 1 and 11, you know, about the Pelicans picks, because it seems to be so deep. And again, I'm talking from limited knowledge, but from everything I've read, and I trust Chad Ford a lot. Ford just, even before, it was funny, before this season, when it was all Wiggins, he was like, you watch the early returns based on how they play, people are going to start talking about Wiggins not going first. And it's exactly, you know, what has happened. But he's talked about, you know, 7 to 10 potential all-stars in the draft, you know, so.
Yeah. And then the thing with Wiggins is, and Tom Zeller wrote about it, I think yesterday or the day before, the hype machine is so strong with him. And he's such like an unassuming kid.
Right.
That when he's not going to, you know, have a Carmelo game where he's just taking over every possession, people are going to be like, oh, he's not assertive enough. He doesn't care. He just sort of goes with the flow. And then Julius Randle is just like the alternative.
Right.
It's sort of just like, oh, I like the second guy because I like the second guy, because the first guy sucks.
Yes.
Because everybody likes the first guy, so I'll take the second guy. It's like hipster scouting is basically what it is.
It's funny. It's funny, too, because the criticism of Wiggins on some level in not being assertive and maybe, you know, playing too much in the flow of the game and not taking over enough is exactly the same criticism I heard of one LeBron James for several years. So it's, you know, take that for what it's worth. So I have no idea who's best. To me, Parker looked a little more polished, at least as a wing, than Wiggins does. But and Randall looks like one of those guys, honestly, that I've said to you on before that I'm a wings guy. Like I just like, you know, guys, I think everybody sort of, most people, you know, a wing player is more impressive to watch than a post player. But there was something about Randall to me that looked just, I don't know, that didn't look NBA-ish to me, I guess. Mm-hmm. Not that he won't be, but he looked like one of those power forwards that just doesn't do anything for me personally, even though he played great in the second half. But that's why I was more impressed with the other two guys.
Well, he doesn't look like he's, I mean, he's very strong, and he's left-handed. And he doesn't look particularly like a guy that's athletic or can jump, but he is.
Right.
I think there's a little baby fat in there. I think there's a little Anthony Bennett, Zach Randolph baby fat. But don't get me wrong, like he is a tremendously athletic player. You can tell that based on like the second jump with those guys, like the when, you know, if he misses a shot and then he jumps and tips it in kind of thing.
Right.
That's a good indication of if a guy can get up or not. He's got some work to do with his outside shot. they doubled him pretty early and made him turn the ball over. He had 8 turnovers last night. Julius Randle did. So he's got to be. He'll have more room to operate in the post in the pro game, and also he'll have a point guard that's more distributing than the Harrison twins, and he'll have shooters around him. And UK at this point is more a bunch of very talented basketball players who don't work well together, and they might get there. But right now it's a lot of ISO ball. It's a lot of just break your man down. But what I like about Randle so much, and I wrote about it today, is how he goes so hard at the rim, and he's so strong, and he just goes right into contact, absorbs it, and puts the ball in a place where he can still then, after he takes the contact, he can still get off a clean shot.
Right.
And he's got such soft touch there that he just gives the ball an opportunity to go in. Like, he puts it on the rim, and his touch is so soft that it just rolls in. It was last night. It was so impressive. He's just like taking the contact, and the left-handedness also. It was just it was very impressive because Michigan State has some big, strong upperclassmen in there: Brandon Dawson, Adrian Payne, and he's 18, 19 years old. So it was impressive. Julius Randle will be a very good pro. I think he, if you want to talk about a comp for him, I mean, it's weird because I also like Anthony Bennett. I think Julius Randle is a more polished, more physical Anthony Bennett.
Well,
right now.
Could you make a comp that is somebody that's who's totally successful at the NBA, who's made more than one shot?
Easy. it's the same as my, my Anthony Bennett comp, I guess. It's a more athletic, more athletic outside shooting Zach Randolph.
Okay. That makes sense then. That's a better.
And that's a tough guy to handle, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and I guess if you're, while we're already in this discussion, so you might as well say it, a bully-ish power forward to me fits well on some level next to Noel. If you're talking about the Sixers, because of what we know of Nerlens Noel. And then, what makes the Sixers draft particularly interesting, given it, at this point they will have top half first round picks, whether it's 2 lottery picks, whatever it is, that depending on where the depth of talent is, if you figure that the Sixers are going to need a wing player and going to need an upfront player, who they take at what position may have something to do with who may be available with the second pick. If there's a front line guy that they really like, that they feel like they can get at 8, and there's a, which means that, there's fewer wings and maybe they want to get the wing at 3. There's so many things. It's so hard to say who you'd want because there's so many, and we don't know the results of the potential Turner and Hawes and Thad Young trades and what players end up being there. There's so many things to figure out that it's hard to even guess, but it is nice to know that looking at all 3 guys, all 3 of them on such a big stage, at such an early time in their college careers, all performed on some level in an impressive way.
And that's the fun. That's the fun of it, is thinking about, how many moves can happen and how flexible the Sixers are. After just like, half an off season from Sam Hinkie. Like, it didn't take much, and now all of a sudden we're flush with like flexible assets and movable pieces. I think as long as the Sixers get one pick in the top 7, then I think they'll be just fine. I think they'll end up somewhere in the top 5, and I think all of Julius Randle, Jabari Parker, and Aaron Gordon are best fits at the power forward at the next level. And I think they'll get one of those guys, and then just hypothetically, and then one of the good shooting, efficient wings. My ideal draft is basically like, something like Julius Randle, and Gary Harris or Wayne Zeldin. Gary Harris played for Michigan State last night. Very efficient, can shoot really well. He's sort of just the prototypical two guard. He's long. He's pretty athletic. He's sort of, I look at him and I only see, like, oh, it's Eric Gordon. I think he's like, that's Eric Gordon right there. And that'd be great for mid first round. And Wayne Zeldin is my favorite player in college basketball right now. He's a shooting guard in Kentucky. Sorry, Kansas. He's tremendously athletic, great court vision, can shoot lights out. Really just a strong kid. I saw him in Adidas Nations and started just salivating over his body. I tweeted some, like, homoerotic things about him. Like, he's excellent. So I really would really love to put him next to MCW at the two.
So while we're on, might as well just skip to this, and then we can talk about the Cleveland games and the San Antonio game. But I feel like the top story this week has been the sort of, you know, the trade stuff has become top level, as we assumed that most of the Sixers story this year was going to be, you know, sort of trade talk and not.
Yeah.
It was going to bounce between how well they're playing, bounce between the development of the young guys and then trade talk. And we had such a great week and a half of development of the young guys. And then, you know, MCW had a couple of, at least one iffy game. And then the Sam Amico sort of half-hearted Evan Turner. I even asked him, I was like, I can't tell from your article whether you're saying these would be good fits or these are teams who are interested. And he was like, you're right. And I was like, well, okay, but I asked you a question. So, he's like,
not much of a reporter.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not trying to insult his reporting at all. You know, I'm not, I'm just saying that when I was reading it, it was like, these are teams that could be interested. And I was like, oh, well, does that just mean that you're speculating that they could be interested? So whatever. Yeah. But the team, it was Evan Turner-ish, and it involved. So, okay. And I had a couple of questions from Twitter. And so I might as well ask you those, and then we'll get on to potential suitors. One of the questions, and one of the things that I've heard a bunch of times, which is very predictable, and it's even from non-team Evan people, but I could have told you that this was going to happen, is that him playing well immediately has begun to translate into, well, why are we trading him then? So I guess my question to you is twofold. Is first of all, has his improved play made you want to keep him anymore? And another question I got off of Twitter was, would you consider trading him at some point just because, and get nothing back, just cap space, in an effort to make sure that the team plays a little more poorly so they win fewer games? So first question, any thought to keeping Evan Turner based on how he's played?
Well, let me dismiss the second question.
Okay.
First, no.
Okay.
You don't trade Evan Turner unless you get proper value in return. You don't trade him just because, oh, we're too good, let's lose.
Okay.
So that's out of the question.
And there will be some value. You could at least get, I mean, I would imagine there's a bottom of the first round pick somewhere if you need, you know what I mean? If they're set on not paying him, I guess I would say if they're set on not paying him, getting a draft pick is better than getting no draft pick, right?
Yeah, well, he's a restricted free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah. I guess they could trade him then.
No, I don't think you can trade him at the end of the year. It'll have to be a sign and trade.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But you can't sign and trade a restricted free agent, can you? Not if he signed an offer sheet. You can't trade him to that team.
Right.
Okay.
Listen, I said this was going to happen. I said Evan Turner was going to be an all-star, and he's going to be better. So how are we doing right now, Spike, Evan Turner all-star campaign?
It's very... You know,
no
Mike.
Comment.
Mike, you can't tell everyone how early it is.
This is the one thing that I'm like, I sort of half believe. So I really don't have much skin in the game here.
Fair enough. I will say,
since it's right, I'm just rubbing it in your face.
That's fine. I will say that A, I do not believe he'll make the All-Star team.
Sure.
I do think that B, I am surprised and impressed at the. And I guess I should have figured it looking at their lineup. And we've said this before. I didn't count on the pace they were going to play, and I should have known that. And I didn't count on the the inability of the other guys to score as much. So Turner's getting more shots than I thought. He's been more efficient than I thought, and they're playing at a higher pace. So where I was thinking 17 points, he's coming up with 22. And, you know, it all makes sense to me why it's happening. It hasn't changed my opinion on him in general. I am impressed about how he's played. I've always said that I think he can be a productive NBA player, and I think there is a portion of him right now that is doing the best player on a bad team thing that we've seen. So, you know, somebody's got to score the points, and that is not that's not to detract from Evan Turner as a player, but on on a good team, he's not scoring 22 points a game. He's just he's not. So
of course not. No.
So back to the first question. So go ahead after you've gloated.
First of all, this isn't going to continue. He's not going to keep shooting an absurd percentage on off the dribble jump shots. He's not going to be one of the like six or seven best players in the NBA at percentage at the rim. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
It's early and numbers normalize, and it's great that it's happening now because he had a full season last year and to some extent the first 2 years of being, you want to say unlucky. It's not quite as simple as, you know, batting average and balls in play in baseball, but not getting some calls and just missing some shots that he would have normally made. So it's nice that now it's going the other direction, but it will, you know, regress. It just happens. That's what numbers do. They regress to the mean. So he's not going to keep shooting above 50% this year. He hasn't shown that he's capable of hitting a consistent outside shot. But he is going to the line. I think he's gone to the line at least five times in every game.
Right.
That might not be right, but in my head, that's what has happened. And that's huge. That's so huge because an Evan that gets the line, as I said before the season, is a just different basketball player. Is a completely different, more efficient, incredibly more helpful basketball player. But when you're talking about signing him and talking about what sort of price you can pay him that would make him valuable, and I don't think there really is one. Evan will almost undoubtedly want to explore the free agent market. I don't think he's just going to sign with the Sixers and say, okay. He's the kind of guy that wants to talk to other people about how good he is and wants to see what his value is. And then we'll take that, no matter what happens, put a chip on his shoulder and go from there. The Sixers, Evan will want to be paid like the player he is this year. So if he's averaging, if he finishes the year averaging 20 points, because I think it'll go down. So if he averages 20 points by the end of the season, the Sixers haven't traded him, then he's going to want to get paid like a 20 points per game player in the NBA, which is basically, you know, it's more than Drew money.
Yeah, it's $12 million a year. It's 30,
yeah,
right?
It's something like that. Yeah,
four years and $50 million or something like that.
Something like that. And you know what? If he makes the All Star team, which he will, if he makes the All Star team, then I think he's going to ask for a max contract. That's how. He's not going to get one from anybody, but I think that's where it's starting from.
Max for him would be about 14, right? Something like that. Like,
yeah,
56 over 4 years or something like
that. Yeah, something like that, or 62 or something like that. And that's an issue because you are no team in history, no one is going to win a championship with Evan Turner as your best player or even just one of your maxed players. I like Evan. I want Evan to do well. I love that he's playing within a team concept, but he's not going to take a 2 year, $15 million contract to see what happens. His value right now is higher than it's ever been. And if he keeps playing reasonably well, he won't keep this up again. But if he keeps playing to a point where it's like, okay, he's averaging, at the end of the year, he's averaging 27 and 4 on 48% shooting and getting to the line at a reasonable rate, then it's like, that's a good player. But that's not a player that you can afford to overpay.
Right. So, and some people were asking, well, can he be just, you know, without answering it, let's just, can he be the third best player on a contender? Well, the problem is that maybe he could, but he couldn't at $15 million a year. Like,
right.
You're not paying unless your first two best players are LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, then you can't really pay your third best player that much money and succeed, you know, and it makes him, essentially, it makes him sort of untradeable at that moment. Like, you're putting a lot of your eggs in his basket if you're doing that.
Yeah, and the Sixers aren't close enough
right.
to contending where they can even, okay, well, we'll overpay him a little bit maybe for a couple of years, and then we'll get out from under it. They can't. They're not at that place. So I think it's a bummer that Evan has sort of been playing the disgruntled superstar, because I think that might knock his value a bit. Hopefully he just shuts up the rest of the year.
Yeah.
But I think Hinkie has been trying to move him, is currently trying to move him, and will continue trying to move him. Just because the odds of getting Evan on a fair or even Sixers-friendly market value contract are just low. They're just low. There's going to be one team that wants to overpay Evan. It only takes one team. Not everyone has to agree on what the value is of a player for them to get signed in free agency or restricted free agency. It just takes one stupid team. Usually that team is the Knicks. And I think someone's going to give him not how much money he's going to want, but someone's going to give him enough money where the Sixers are like, well, have fun.
Yeah,
good luck.
DeAndre Jordan signed a ridiculous offer sheet, you know, and
yeah.
Even the Eric Gordon, I like Eric Gordon, but given his injury history
yeah.
and, you know, and that he seems to be a bit of a whiny baby, you know, the fact that he can get that much. And I think Eric Gordon is much, much better than at their peaks is a better player than Evan
yeah.
Turner. But that still, all that said,
I saw Eric Gordon, 2 days ago. He was in the restaurant below my apartment in Santa Monica.
Did you say hello?
No, he was by himself. I didn't want to just, you know, burst in. Tanner was with me. I was about to take Tanner to the airport. And we saw, I was about to go to my apartment. I was like, that's Eric Gordon. Right in my apartment. Right there. Sitting down to eat lunch. And we sort of giggled like little girls outside for a bit. We're like, you know what? Let him be out of his own, you know?
Well, because really, what do you say to you? Wait, do you say, hey, you're Eric Gordon, you know?
We stuck around for a bit to see if, like, Drew was meeting him. So he's by himself, so I was like, well, we'll see if Drew comes in. Because if Drew comes in, then it's like, all right, we got to do something.
Absolutely, absolutely. You'd have to say something to Drew. So
yeah.
What was I going to say about Turner? And the other thing I think that I'll mention about Turner in that, which is sort of, I mean, the thing with Hinkie, is that, and the thing with trading any of these guys is really finding the sweet spot of when you have the right deal at the right time, you know, when you've sort of let their value get highest, or, you know, waiting for another team to get, do you wait for an injury for a team to get desperate? Do you just send them to, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. I think one of the things about Hinkie trying to trade him now, which you mentioned that you think he's doing, and I would probably agree, is that the more that they lose games, the more that the team plays poorly, and I think that was something that you saw in the Golden State game and look, it's no surprise that when a team loses, that your stats are worse. That's not a surprise. That's what happens. It's like when they say, you know, so-and-so's quarterback rating in wins is 110 and in losses is 85. It's like, yeah, no shit. Like, when they
yeah.
lose, when he plays worse, there's probably a better chance that he's going to lose. But when you look at, the San Antonio game, which I think was Evan's first more shots than points effort of the year, and sort of like iffy defense, I thought. But the more that they lose,
yeah.
I think the easier it will be for him to get frustrated, and easier it will be for him to sort of do a little, well, I got to get my numbers, I'm going to take my shots, and I think you'll see more inefficiency, I think, which could eventually drive his value down, which is why I think it's probably important that the trade him sooner rather than later thing exists, I would guess.
I don't think it'll happen. December 15th is a big day for when some trade restrictions go away. So I don't think it'll happen until at least December 15th, and then I think January 3rd is a number. I don't know why. I've spent a lot of time on Trade Machine.
Well, January 3rd, you could sign restricted free agents, right, that you had signed prior to that year. I think that's when guys that you have just signed to a restricted free agent deal become eligible to trade.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the December one is.
I think December one is something along the same lines.
Okay.
For a player like that was recently traded, can be traded again to any team, but that something like that. So I don't think it'll happen until at least December or January, because there are so many players that are currently unavailable, so many contracts that are tougher to negotiate around. But in trading Evan, Hinkie will not trade him for what he believes is lesser value. He just won't do it. Like there's some GMs that you could see getting hoodwinked into doing something. Ruben Amaro is someone that just gets hoodwinked into doing whatever the opposing GM or the player's agent wants him to do. But he won't do it. He will assess a player's value objectively, not putting much emotion behind it, and just saying like, this is what his value is. This is how much I need from him. I need for him. And if you're not going to give me that, I'm not going to trade him. Because Evan has value as just letting him walk. There's more value in just letting Evan walk than trying to get, a crappy contract and like a late first round pick. There's not a ton of value in that. So the way I see it is, Hinkie will try to get a first round pick, an expiring contract, and a young guy for Evan playing at this level. I don't think a team will give him that. What I think will happen is Hinkie will trade Evan for a first round pick in the 2015 draft. I think everybody, and I think Hinkie recognizes this, everybody is now overvaluing this draft. Not in that this draft isn't good, just in that
it's getting a little crazy.
It would take your firstborn child for me to trade a lottery pick at this point. And
right.
And a lot of teams just don't have them. There's so many teams that already have picks traded away for this year or next year that they can't move picks this year.
Minnesota notably has already traded their 2014 first round pick. I think that goes to Phoenix as long as they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So and they're were thought to be one of the number one Evan Turner suitors.
Right.
Of the teams mentioned, to Dallas, Minnesota, Cleveland, Oklahoma City, I think were the teams mentioned. Cleveland doesn't make any sense to me. I think they'll try to do something bigger than Evan Turner. And honestly, with him and Kyrie Irving and Dion Waiters, it just sounds like awful to me.
Waiters is the worst.
Yeah, and let me just say, Cleveland, watching them in person, like if Kyrie Irving isn't awesome, they stink. Like that is a really, you want to talk about, if anyone at all wants to talk about the downside of the build on lottery picks, everyone always points to the positive side as Oklahoma City. If you want to look at the ugly side of building on lottery picks, you can look no further than the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I don't know that I agree with that. They made bad decisions. I like Tristan Thompson, but they reached for him. And
right.
Dion Waiters was just a bad draft pick.
Yeah, a huge reach on Dion Waiters, I thought. He's a sixth man, and they don't even play him in the right spot. And your boy, he may be good at some point, but the way Bennett's playing doesn't make anyone feel any bit better.
No. And I feel bad because he's coming off injury, and I wish he wasn't the first overall pick, because then, less pressure on him, and he can just sort of build his game. But
and hilariously, they took him because they wanted to win now, and they wanted somebody more NBA ready than
that's just wrong. I mean, he's not. Oladipo was the most NBA ready player in that draft.
Yeah.
So
to me, Minnesota probably fits the best, and Dallas. To me, it's Minnesota and Dallas. Those are the two teams, at least of the ones that were mentioned, that I guess make the most sense.
And I would say I would add Oklahoma City to that. I think they need some bench scoring, and I think. I think putting him and Lamb together isn't the worst thing in the world.
Well, I would worry about him. I mean, we'll see. And I know it's a contract year for him, so maybe he wouldn't be. But being on the bench, coming off the bench, there's a risk. If Sam Presti, if you are a listener of this podcast, beware that Mr. Mopey Face may return if you make Evan Turner the sixth man. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think it's different if he's playing next to Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant on a near first place Oklahoma City team. I think that's different.
He would get those as a sixth man, I guess.
Yeah.
So, he'd be able to. So, I guess, yeah, and you'd agree on Cleveland, right? I mean, it doesn't make much sense. The Cleveland thing doesn't make much sense.
No, and, well, they drafted Waiters, so I don't know. Maybe they, I think from an objective perspective, no, it doesn't make much sense. But from a would Cleveland do it perspective, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what I think. I think it'll end up being, I think Hinkie will trade for a 2015 first-round pick, a good one. Because this draft is over, is getting so massively costly that he'll just be like, okay, well, I'll just wait till next year, and then he'll have that pick. And the draft, in theory, is always so much more exciting than it is when, you know, pick 10 comes around and all those guys are gone, and you're like, and you know, you're Denver or Dallas, and you're looking at it like, I don't love any of these guys. Shit. And then I think Hinkie will come and be like, well, I have a pick next year if you want that, like that kind of thing. It's even if you know, the Sixers temporarily get a first round pick next year for him, if only as a piece to move up in the draft this year. Either way, Hinkie will outsmart some people by be like, okay, not this year then. You keep your pick this year, totally. What about next year? Well, not as big of a draft class, like that kind of thing, and it's just about piling up assets, and you know, once there are players that in this draft end up deciding to stay in college for another year, I think next year will also look pretty appealing as well.
Well, yeah, and let's be honest, even if everything works out well in the draft for them, they could still they're still going to need pieces. You know, a 2015 first round pick is still going to be a good thing for them. You know, they're not in the sort of top level echelon of NBA teams that, you know, are so sure they're going to be picking late and need to make a championship run and blah 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 and so on and so forth. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Cleveland games and the San Antonio game. The Cleveland games, the second one, if you could make a poster out of the best possible game that the Sixers could play this year, you know, including performance of everyone, you know, the way they played, the position that they were in playing that game on the second half of a back-to-back and still losing on a buzzer beater, you know, in double overtime. It was like, I enjoyed it much more than I enjoyed, and not because they lost. I don't care. Like, I am, you know, I understand the value of losses, but if they win, they win. I'm happy when they win. But yeah. I enjoyed that second game much more than I enjoyed the first game.
You enjoyed the first game against Cleveland?
Yes. Just watching the games. I mean, the first game against Cleveland was great because of the Tony Roten show, which was fantastic. Yeah. But the second game was wonderful. The double overtime game was wonderful to watch.
It was awesome. It's MCW has had some clunkers in there, and nobody's really noticed that he's starting to shoot really poorly from the field.
Yeah, I think he's under 40% now.
Yeah, he's pressing. He's taking, you know, he's not getting the open looks he got in the first few games, and he's sort of trying to take it to the game rather than letting it come to him, which is expected because the team's not very good. There's not many guys on the team that can shoot, and he's starting as a rookie is starting to press a bit. I think he'll figure it out, but shot selection is super important for him, especially.
Yep.
But that game was great. It was so much fun. They just going back and forth with MCW and Kyrie, and Evan had a couple nice plays in there. And I'm mixing up my games. But did Thad play well, or was that where Thad kind of disappeared?
Which game?
The overtime game. He had like 28 or something.
Yeah, and he hit that shot to send it into the first overtime. Yeah. A really
and that
nice
was a
one.
Nice move. Yep. Yeah, a nice like, lefty scoop.
It was the best Thad move. It was that quick first step Thad move. It was.
He got by Tristan Thompson there.
Yep.
I think it was. Yeah, it was. I mean, that's exactly what you want. That really is. Like, if you could step back, like, during the game, you know, you're rooting for them to win because it's a fun team to follow. And you know, during the game at this point in the season, you should be rooting for them to win. But after the game, it's like, oh, that's exactly what you want. That is exactly the blueprint for successful failure that you could possibly put together.
And I forgot to address it, but I know you're best friends with him now, but Spencer Hawes's play has not made you want to, he is still out of here, correct? I mean, for many of the same reasons as Evan, given his potential
I think you're more likely to get Spencer Hawes on a fair deal than you are Evan. I think he has more value as a guy that they trade than he has as a guy that they sign to a, you know, 3 years, $18 million contract. I think that'd be fine if he signed 3 years, $18 million. But the Sixers, you look at it and you're like, okay, well, what are the Sixers going to be in 3 years? Is he going to help, or is he just going to be hanging around while they're still building the pieces up, and then when they do have the pieces, trading them?
Incidentally, that would be a pay cut for him, I believe, at 3 years, $18 million. So
no, it's the same.
Isn't he two at 13? I'll double check, but I thought he...
two at 13, 2 at 12. So yeah. 6-18 in that six-ish area. I'm just making up numbers. That wasn't based in fact or anything.
Right.
I think Spencer's value around the league is still relatively low, but there's going to be someone that would trade a first-round pick for him either this year or next year, or at least like a high upside, young, cheap guy kind of thing. I newfound love for Spencer, of course. I think I'm just remembering a dream I had about him, so things are great. He's playing out of his mind. Like he's playing out of his mind. It's really exciting to watch a Spencer unleashed, Spencer unchained. I think they'll move him within the next few months, hopefully to a contender where he can just do finger guns and American headbands and win a championship.
I really wish we had been doing this podcast longer so I could do it. I'm Mike Levin, Spencer Hawes, Mega Mix. Oh my goodness! Maybe if hey, writes to Ricky Sanchez podcast listeners. My old, almost every radio show I've done, I would say 70% of my radio shows are on this podcast feed, and you can see who the guests are. If you would like to go back to Mike Levin's appearances on that show and find him talking about Spencer Hawes, and maybe create such a mega mix of...
You're just outsourcing your work
before and after.
People that listen to this podcast.
I've been outsourcing my work. I was outsourcing my work when I was unemployed. For my own website. So now that I actually have a job, outsourcing my work seems real. It seems much more likely and fair. The San Antonio game was just exactly.
That was one you can skip.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was exactly what you would expect, the worst case scenario of a San Antonio game. And I know you like, what's his name, on the Spurs? Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Dude, he's a good player, but I'm a little not buying the hype on him.
Yeah, and that I love him as a player. I absolutely love him, and I've loved him since he was at San Diego State. But if San Antonio is going to make him into the second coming, if they're going to make him a superstar, he's not. He's not Paul George. He doesn't have the offensive firepower as Paul George. I think he can be I think he's Iguodala. I really think he is that is his ceiling, essentially. Which is great because Iguodala is awesome, but he's not going to be the best player on a Spurs contending team.
No. Well, the simple fact is watching him is like, and I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I think he's a good player, but watching him, when I think offensively, like he doesn't have any standout offensive skills. He does some things pretty well, but I watch him, and just when he has the ball, there's no. You know, when you talk about Iguodala being his ceiling, that's his ceiling. That's not where he is. You know, there are some things Iguodala can do with the ball when he has the ball. You know he's a very good passer. He's got really good court vision. He's good spot up three-point shooter, all those things, and I don't see many of those things with Kawhi Leonard yet. Not that he won't do it at some point. I know he's intense, and he's a good defender, and he's a good corner three-point shooter, but overall, I just don't see it. You know,
he can shoot, and he can take the ball to the basket a bit. He needs to work on his dribbling and his mid-range game, because if you're going to be a very good player, you have to be able to hit shots off the dribble. And he hit a couple of those against Sixers. I think he's excellent, but not for the role that they seem to be priming him for, unless they want to be like the sixth seed for a long time.
Yeah, by the way, Spencer Hawes is at $6.5 million this year, which is a little bit more than Jason Richardson, who is making $6.2 million to wear a suit.
Yeah.
So are you ready for a little relationship advice? Were there anything else you want to touch on? Because we do have a relationship question from Matt on Twitter.
Do you want to talk about the Phillies for 2 seconds?
Okay. No? I'm going to have to do it tonight on WIP. You can listen to me tonight from 10 to 2. I will say that, look, my opinion on the Marlon Byrd signing is, one, A, it's hilarious. And B, it's only hilarious because I don't think in a vacuum it is the worst signing of all time, but it's the sort of signing that a team that is close to being good makes, and they are not close to being good, which makes it like you're now counting on yet another 36-year-old to produce as if 36-year-olds don't get worse as they get older. You know, it's just another guy that just like, come on. Like, it was just so Phillies. That's all I'll say. It was just so Phillies.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like they're going to learn, especially when you have one organization, and I would even argue maybe two with the Eagles, or at least going that way, where their front office is so competent and just gets it, and we're obviously such hinky supporters that we wouldn't say anything else, but then you look at the Phillies and it's just, you don't really know if it's ownership pushing down on him or if it's Amaro just being an overt imbecile.
Yeah.
But,
and that is a fair point I've made a million times. Like, ownership may be saying, you're not getting rid of Utley, you're not getting rid of Howard, here's your salary limit, make the most of it. So, if that's the case, then, you know, it is what it is.
But even moderately competent people would see that and take it into and try to make something more out of it. Like, I love that they didn't have to give up a draft pick in signing Marlon Byrd. That's probably a big issue, but like, what negotiating power does Ruben Amaro have? What has he done that he's like, yes, I got a win there?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Marlon Byrd made $700,000 last year. He had a mostly breakout campaign, at least in terms of power, at his age 35, 36 year. And he's getting signed to a 2-year with a vesting option for a third year. And it's just like at exactly his market value. And it's like, there's no way Marlon Byrd would have gotten more than that.
No. And you're doing it so, like, you got to get in on Marlon Byrd
early. It's like, why are you setting it? Why do you have to set the fucking, it's incredible. I was emailing with Dave Reuter about it. And we're just like, Ruben, this is what you've been doing. It's old out. It's Raul Ibanez. It's Delman Young. Even though he wasn't that old, he felt old. You just don't have to do it. You just wait. Just let other people sign people, and you step in and get the guy for cheaper. Because once the market value is set, once Nelson Cruz doesn't get $575, then it's going to be like, oh, you get Marlon Byrd for $210 without a vesting option.
It's like, okay. Essentially, Marlon Byrd's last 2 years are the failure of the Phillies in that none of the guys they signed for $700,000 on a minor league deal end up being Marlon Byrd for the year. They just end up signing Marlon Byrd the next year. And their attempt at that was Delman Young, you know, who is dreadful. So, it's just everything is so Phillies about it, and why it's so hopeless. And I just think it's hopeless.
If they trade fucking Dominic Brown for, and other minor league talent for Jose Bautista, which your dad is saying they're going to do,
well, he's saying,
I'm going to shoot him in the head.
He said they were discussing it. I honestly, straight up, I personally wouldn't have a problem with it. But if it's anything more than Don Brown.
I couldn't even look at it. I saw it last night before I went to bed and went to sleep with white hot rage. How old is Jose Bautista? Is he like 33?
32.
32? That's not awful, but it's not good. Like, can we just have a young person on the team?
That's the biggest problem.
And young, and we can just, once these old shitheads, and I love them, I love these shitheads, but once these old shitheads retire and their contracts are off the books, we're not just left with fucking Michael Martinez and a bag of chips. Like, can't we just have someone that's, like, young and still getting better and growing older? Like, what's wrong with that?
The context.
You're not going to win now. It's not going to happen.
The context. The context I was saying it was within the Phillies' current context, within the, okay, we want to try to be good next year. To me, the height of Dom Brown is the very best version of Dom Brown is probably not as good as Jose Bautista is. So with that said, if you're trying to win next year, Jose Bautista gives you a better chance to win. But I do agree with you. Like, can we not have every guy be over 30? Like, at some point, you just have to start. You have to start worrying about next year. And their refusal to do it is both on some level admirable, but mostly it's sickening. So
I mean, they're a more ignorant Dallas Mavericks.
Yes, much more ignorant.
It's incredible, and I just don't know what it's going to take for Ruben Amaro to not have a job anymore, or for ownership to change. I mean, the analytics thing was just a complete facade. That's not making a difference in any way. The way I see it is, the metaphor came to my head, and it's a bad metaphor, but I'm going to say it because I'm dumb. What's it going to take for how many gun-related crimes is it going to take for gun control to happen? How many terrible moves is it going to take for the Phillies ownership to change? That is the metaphor I had. Probably not good.
You want to bring up abortion too while you're at it? Maybe race relations.
Let's get Spencer Hawes on the line. Yeah. Spencer, what do you think? All right, relationship advice. Here we go.
Well, we only have a minute. The question from Matt is it true that if you don't use it, you'll lose it? Mike.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree too. I agree as well. Well, that's all I got. We got to go. Read Mike's stuff on libertyballers.com. Follow him at Michael_Levin. And please rate us on iTunes. An impressive performance by you today, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, see you.
See you, Mike. Like I said, hold your head, son. Don't take a second. Check it out.